Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from Lighthouse Hockey and the Fans First Sports Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me on this Sunday evening via Zencaster is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, there was some good, some bad, but ultimately the Islanders did what we asked them to do last week. They went out and took 4 out of a possible 6 points. They're sitting right in the thick of the Metro right now. There's not a ton to complain about. Well, of course, we'll find something. But this is about as fine a start as you could probably have hoped for. You know, 6 games or 7 games into the season right now.
Yes. The season is still on the rails.
Yes.
which is really nice because, I mean, when we were going through this part of the schedule last year, the Islanders were 2-4 out of the gates. They obviously started 2-1. The two teams they beat were terrible Sharks and Ducks teams. Then they traveled to Florida, and the season ended in that that swing with the Hurricanes and then the Florida two-step, and they're 2-4 coming back home. And I think when you look back on it, like, that was maybe one of, since not including the COVID season, because that was an outlier season for us, I think, as well. That episode that we did after the Florida swing was maybe one of our most desperate. If I went back and listened to it, I'd probably be embarrassed. One of those ones. And there was a moment when the Islanders lost, where it was clear the Islanders were going to lose that game to Colorado after they gave up that fifth goal.
Yeah.
And I went thinking back to that episode, and I've thought about that feeling a lot. Like, cringy, whiny. We talk so much about how people just, like, complain, like, do something, and we ended up doing that for like an hour that episode. And when the Avalanche scored to make it 5-4, I just thought, I'm gonna have to do that again, and I'm gonna hate myself for doing it, because there's no way that you know, maybe they'll win one of the next two, or they'll get a point, maybe they'll get two, but I had a hard time seeing them win two. And then they kept it on the rails. They kept everything on the rails. That game against Ottawa, we can talk about, because
yeah,
I had like an existential crisis just during that second period.
Oh my God.
Because I kept forgetting the game was tied. It just felt like the Islanders were losing like 5-2 because I've seen that game so many times, and that game ends with the Islanders losing by 3 or 4 goals. Like the last 7 minutes are basically a practice because the game's been over. And somehow, well, we know why, because they got these incredible goalies. But even that game, they kept on the rails somehow. So yeah, I couldn't, you know, maybe it doesn't sound like it, but I couldn't be happier with the start at 4-2-1. I would have bit your hand off for that if you offered it to me through the first 7 games.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, it's that Ottawa game drew a lot of ire to myself personally, thanks to our friend Arthur Staple. So we'll talk a lot about that. And the Avalanche game was surprisingly competitive until it wasn't, which is really, really annoying. But then we have a game against the Blue Jackets in Columbus, a place where the Islanders feel like they never win. That was a pretty vintage performance as well. Before we dive into all of these, reminder that you can get ad-free episodes of Islanders Anxiety plus bonus content and all kinds of fun stuff at patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety. Plans start as low as $2 a month, and you get ad-free episodes of all of our shows, plus extra bonus content and written posts and stuff like that as well. So sign up patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety. Let's start with the Avalanche game real quick, although nothing about this game is going to be quick because there was a lot going on here. The Islanders lost 7-4, and in the first period, it was pretty much all Avalanche. It was embarrassing. It was awful. The Islanders did tie the game, but then Cale Makar untied it. Ryan Johansson's goal was like this sort of floating one-timer. He didn't get all of it there, Edzo, that's for sure, but it still went in. So, I mean, it was 2-1, but it felt like 5-1 the Islanders were going into the second period. But then all of a sudden the Islanders just came to life, and they pretty much outplayed the Avs for the better part of the second period, again, until they didn't. And Bo and Byram tied the score with 41 seconds left, and then in the blink of an eye, Nathan MacKinnon untied it, and you were down 3-2, and you're like, wait, what the heck just happened? I don't understand. They went from up 3-2 to being down 4-3 in the blink of an eye. And they tried their hardest in the third, but Lee had a beautiful goal, maybe the best goal I've ever seen Anders Lee score. He was kind of wobbling, but he shot it in from the slot. It was great. And then Adam Pellick, who had maybe the worst game of his entire career, had a shot blocked, went to Thomas Tatar, who fed it to Antti Rantanen, makes it 5-4 Colorado. And you thought, all right, you know, we can make this work. We can get it back. In fact, Tatar was called for 2 penalties in the same play, giving the Islanders basically a double minor. Didn't go anywhere. Barzal got called for boarding. The whole thing washed away. 2 empty net goals. And they end up losing 7-4. And it was just, it was the kind of game where, like, you look at that and you're like, oh man, they must have gotten their asses handed to them. But it was a lot more competitive than that, which made it really kind of hard to stomach. Like, you guys had this and they could have won it. And then they didn't, because the Avs, at the time, again, the Avs were 6-0. They would lose a couple of nights later in Pittsburgh, which was annoying. But Sorokin was fantastic. Wasn't really on him. Georgiev was fantastic, but shots on goal were 41-31 Colorado, and it was overall they were just really sloppy, which would become a theme for the next game too. What do you think of the game against the Avs, and like how much of this tortured you knowing that they had the lead and then they didn't, and then they were down a goal and then they weren't, and before you know it, the whole thing was just a wall. It was gone in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, it was torturous, I think is a good good word for that one, because it the first couple minutes you're like, God, this thing's gonna be over in 8 minutes, and they showed some spunk,
sure,
get themselves back in the game, and I thought then gave a pretty good account of themselves for a while there.
That second period was fantastic. They were great.
they skated with this team, and I think that's been a theme so far of the season, was you could take some a lot of positives from that Devils game. They weren't clean defensively, but they were able to score with one of the best teams in the league. And then they were able to do the same thing against the Avalanche. They never let the game get away from them. And that's some positives you can take from that. the problem is they didn't get a point. They fought their way. They took a lead. They find their way back in this game. They had some chances to go up two goals, and they end up not even getting a point out of that effort, which I thought was upsetting because it really came down to individual errors from some folks that we don't expect to see it from. And like you said, that was an all-time concerning game from Adam Pellick. Like that, even that decision to shoot that puck when he's clearly not got a lane, and you know, like you're playing the Colorado Avalanche. That wasn't like Kevin Adams or someone like that.
The Coyotes bought that shot. Yeah, last week, you know.
Yeah, it's gonna hit that guy's shins, and they're the Avalanche. Everybody on the ice is looking for that exact play, and then he kind of wasn't even out of the play. He did he did what he's been doing this whole season, which is he turns into Rich Pilon, and he tries to put a guy into the eighth row when he should just not do that. He should just be Adam Pellick. I'd much rather Adam Pellick be on this blue line than Rich Pilon. You know, ends up in the back of the net. That was a classic too. Once he blocked that shot, Tatar. Former future Islander Thomas Tatar. once he blocked that shot, I should have just like got up and scooped it out of the back of the net for them because I knew that was coming.
A lot of times when that happens, I literally close my eyes because I know what's coming, and then you know I open them when. And sometimes the case is they don't score, but that one was too easy. It was too easy, you know. Really, Rantanen had the goal, but Tatar made the whole thing.
Yeah, but yeah, and Dobson was back, and we should talk that he's continued his resurgence, and I thought he was one of the few Islanders that had a pretty good game there. I think he was on the ice for a bunch of goals against, but it was because it was the opposite of what usually happens, which is like, Pellick was minus three, but they were all because Dobson was playing for the St. Louis Blues last night, and this time it was that Pellick was playing for the Avalanche. Mm. It kind of just spoiled a good effort, and it piggybacked off that Sabres game. So that didn't help. It happened on the frozen frenzy, and ended up probably being the most exciting game of the night, which was kind of funny because there was a couple of people the next day being like, yeah, the Islanders had a weird one. I guess you got to give credit to the Avalanche for getting the Islanders to score some goals against them and playing like an exciting hockey game for once. Did you guys not see the Devils game? It happened on Friday night. There was nothing else going on.
Marek's producer on Sportsnet was like, you know what was the most exciting game of the night was actually Islanders Avalanche. And, you know, I don't really get the Islanders. Oh, really? The team you never watch, you don't get. Well, I'm shocked. Color me shocked, you know. I don't really. That's like me saying, like, I don't really get nuclear fusion, you know. Like, it's like I don't really deal with nuclear fusion.
I don't really get the Orlando Magic.
Exactly. I don't really get Real Madrid, you know. Like, okay, sure,
I heard him go on, and he's like, you know, I just keep wondering, like, how's this team gonna score enough?
Yeah,
dude, they scored four in that game. I wasn't the score. And then he just like had repeated the same party line that we've now heard from everybody, including Jeff Marek's producer. The team is old. Nothing changed. They don't score, et cetera. So that happening in that backdrop made it even more annoying. And I woke up Wednesday morning nervous because that made the game against Ottawa their first must win of the season.
Yeah, right. Which is not a position you want to be in, you know, six games into the season. And the other crazy thing was that, so they lost that game. Here comes Ottawa, not having a great start, but you know that they're fast, you know that they're young. And in the morning, this news broke that Shane Pinto, who had been a holdout, well, not a holdout, but like he hadn't signed his contract as an RFA, was now suspended for half the season. For some kind of nebulous betting thing, maybe he gave somebody his login information and was doing some sort of proxy betting. I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's very strange. But in any event, he wasn't there. And then the Islanders come out again. They come out on fire. First period, they're fantastic. They go up 2-0. They look great. They're like blowing this young team out of the building. And they're like, okay, that's exactly what you want to see. But then the second period, oh, sorry, it was 2-1 because Claude Giroux scored. It was 2-0 after the first. Claude Giroux scored early. And now you're like, okay, here we go. This is where the wheels come off. Cal Clutterbuck hits Eric Brännström into the boards. His head ends up on the ice. He gets stretched off. It's a very scary scene. Both teams are out and clapping their sticks on the ice, and places dead silent. And from that point on, it was mostly Senators. In fact, the Islanders got globetrotted at a couple of points in their own zone. Jacob Trickren tied it. And the Islanders took 7 penalties in the second period. 7 penalties. It was insane. Sometimes when they were on the power play, they were taking penalties.
Twice. I've never seen in my life of watching this team do absurd shit.
Yeah.
The team go on the power play and 30 seconds later be down 4-on-3 2 times in a game.
It's crazy.
Let alone in a period.
Right. And like, how many 4-on-3s are there in a game at all? You know, what?
Can't tell you last time the Islanders had one, in overtime, right? Like,
right.
That was the thing about that Tatar thing, and I guess the Avalanche. Like, just leave it to the Islanders to finally get one of those very rare 2 penalties on the same whistle, and they somehow don't get a 5-on-3 out of it. And not only that, they completely negate the double minor because Barzal takes a penalty.
There were maybe half a dozen 4-on-3s for a team in a season. The Islanders had 2 in a game, in a period.
Period. Yeah.
Like, it was crazy. And of course, you know, so the Senators tied the game going into third. The vibes are very bad. I don't know what, nobody knows what the hell they're doing. The Islanders look, again, it's embarrassing. It's terrible. Here comes, you know, the Senators team is depleted. They're now without one of their defensemen. They would end up losing Thomas Chabot for a long time after that. So he was probably hobbled too. Pinto news, blah, blah, blah. And the Islanders are all set to blow this thing. In fact, the Senators come out pressure early, but the Islanders sort of slowly take over the game. Noah Dobson was alone in the slot. He missed wide, but then he comes back and wins it with a slap shot from Barzal. Great play. Both teams were kind of sloppy after that, but the Islanders managed to forecheck. With 1 minute left, we had a classic Casey Cizikas shift where he just like puts himself in the other team's zone and just will not let the goalie get off the ice. And it was great to see. I mean, and the place goes crazy for that kind of stuff, which I love. I love that Islanders fans recognize how great that is, that he does that.
Yeah. That, I really didn't know how to handle that game. And I've seen so many different kinds of Islander games in my life. I don't know if I've ever seen that script before.
We should say that Ilya Sorokin had to make 45 saves in that game for the Islanders to win 3-2. Like, it's great. It was crazy.
It's insane. The type of result that if you're just pouring through the box score because you're Jeff Marek's producer or something, you're like, oh, 3-2 Islanders against the Senators. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. And then if you open the door to the game, you'd be like, holy.
Right.
What? Yeah. And
what was going on here?
Yeah, I think I feel like I woke up the next morning. I knew this was going to happen too. It took me in that fog when you wake up and you're like, why am I mad? Why am I mad already when I'm waking up, or why am I in a good mood? And for me, it's pathetically because this team either won or lost the night before. And when I woke up, I needed to remind myself that they won that game and didn't lose it. And I don't even think it was because I was mad. But it was just more, that game confused my emotions because I felt like it was a foregone conclusion that they were going to lose.
Right.
And we were going to read a lot about how the Senators team was pesky and dealt with the Pinto thing. They had the injury to Brännström. They had some other, the thing with Anton Forsberg went the game before he got pulled.
Yeah.
Before the third period. And the coaching staff never told him.
Right.
So Travis Hamonic had to tell him.
Yeah. Josh Bailey was in the building.
Josh Bailey was in the building. So there's all this stuff that I was like, we're going to have to read all about this or hear all about it the next morning. And I just assumed they were going to lose that game. And the second period was such a clusterfuck that at one point you kind of just forgot that Brännström got hurt. And that injury really shook me up because, like, the angle that they showed on the broadcast showed the lights go out, is, I guess, the best way I can put it. Like, you saw him just completely lose consciousness, and then he, like, had his, he, like, came to moment and was almost Paul Kariya-ish. On the ice, and so it took a little while to, like, get any juice back in the game, and then the Islanders just started doing weird stuff. And once again, Adam Pellick was playing like Rich Pilon, and Noah Dobson was playing like Denny Potvin. It was crazy. Sam Bolduc, at one point the next day, I was texting some people. I was like, yeah, you know, Sam Bolduc, I thought, played pretty well last night. And then I checked his time of ice. I'm like, oh, well, that's why I thought he played well. He played 5 minutes and 25 seconds. And Oliver Wahlstrom didn't play at all, basically. And it, so the Islanders were rotating 10 forwards and 5 defensemen. The Senators just had a guy go down the tunnel on a stretcher. The Islanders, like you said, took 7 penalties in a period, 6 minors.
Yeah.
There was a fight. And somehow they ended up winning that game on a great play. Dobson, Dobson was so good in that game. Him and Sorokin were fantastic. I thought Horvat and Barzal were really good. It took probably till Wednesday night for me to appreciate that the Islanders won that game and that those points were truly in their pocket. Like, the NHL wasn't going to come and say, we're just going to take these because of what all the stuff that happened. In that one. And like you said, that the Penguins, the Avalanche went to the Penguins after that game, and we heard all about, oh, the Penguins, they get right. That's what this team can do. It looks like they're back on the right track. And then the Senators go and pace the Penguins their next game. So it was like that. All of a sudden, like I said, the season stayed on track. I would then say that because they won that game against the Senators, the Blue Jackets game was a little bit less of a must win than it obviously would have been if they hadn't won against the Senators, but it was still a look. You're playing one of the worst teams in the conference, even though you're on the road. Spencer Martin is in goal for them. You need to get something out of this game. It was, if that Senators game had every possible chaotic moment you can have in a hockey game, the Blue Jackets game basically had none of them. It was so nice.
It was nice. Before we get to the Blue Jackets game, a couple other things about the Senators game. So the Islanders took 9 penalties overall, and they killed 8 of them. And like, on one hand, that's a positive. But on the other hand, you took 9 penalties. Like, and so after the game was over, I had texted our friend Arthur Staple, another feel bad win. Because that's the way it was. It was like they won. Like you said, like, it felt weird that they won, but like, they were awful. They were terrible in that game, very undisciplined. And like, I started getting mad, not just at the player. I guess some people just feel like if you're getting called a penalty, like, it's the ref's fault. And a couple of those were a little bit weak. The Dobson cross check in the slot, a little bit weak. I think there was one on Nelson that also was, you know, I don't know about that. But most of them were legit, like Kyle Palmieri.
And the Nelson one was the one that negated a power play.
Right.
And from that was the first minor of the period. And from that moment, like, the whole thing just got shook up. So I think that's why people were mad.
The scale started to slide a little bit. But like, you know, Kyle Palmieri, he just flung the puck down the ice and his stick came up and hit, I think, Brady Tkachuk in the face, and he got a penalty. And it's like, dude, that happens. You can't do that. Like, we know this now. You can't do that. And so they were terrible. And like, I started getting mad at the coaching staff. Like, what are you guys doing? Like, this is a very undisciplined, this sloppy, boneheaded stuff right here. And it's really annoying. And so I didn't feel good about that. When, they got the 2 points, which is the most important thing. But like, you can't possibly tell me that that's how you want the Islanders to play. I mean, you shouldn't have to have Sorokin make 45 saves. He was spectacular. I mean, he was shutting down to people left and right. And the next day on 32 Thoughts or the Marek Show, whatever it was, Friedman was like, yeah, the Sens got Sorokin.
Got Sorokin, and there was also aliens on the ice. there were ghosts everywhere. This was
I'm pretty sure
I saw Mats Lindgren take a shift. There was some really strange stuff going on in this one, and I think that's what kind of upsets us, because there's no way they weren't watching this game, yeah. those folks, because right. of the Pinto Senators. Stuff. The and the Senators were a off-season darling. They just lost a couple games in a row. Things were brewing because of the Forsberg thing and then the Pinto thing. Like you said, like they were dealing with a lot. So these guys were watching that game, and it just goes to show that they did watch that game, and they watched one team in that game.
Right.
And I don't know if they watched anything else. And I will say too that Brady Tkachuk after the game paid the Islanders a nice compliment, saying that they all came out and checked on Brännström and whatever, and he's like, that we know why that team is like has such a strong culture and it's been that way for a while, and so I just joking with my friends, like, yeah, I think Brady Tkachuk kind of he plays for the Islanders just for the Senators. He gets it.
We could see that, but I think watching that game by watching one team is probably the best way to put it. But I had sent that text to Art Staple, and he put it on Twitter, as a joke, and I got some pushback, like, well, what are you talking about? They won. They killed these penalties. They came back. They were resilient. Resilient is great. But don't take 9 penalties. Like, don't tell me how they killed 8 of 9 penalties. Don't take 9 penalties.
You have every right to be mad at a team that puts you through right. that.
It's ridiculous.
No matter what. Like, what we went through in that second period.
Yeah.
The fact that there's an intermission after that period, too, where the Islanders, notwithstanding that they have to kill the rest of a penalty to coming out of the tunnel, but just like you play that period. You guys got to go into a locker room and debrief, and we just are all sitting there like,
yeah,
what? Like, yeah. You have every right, I think, to feel like just mad that they put you through that.
And, right.
And that's what sports is. Sports is about emotions and evoking right. teams, evoking emotions. And I would say that you were not out of line there.
And it's exactly like you said about the Avalanche game, too. It comes after that Sabres game in which they were just god awful. Which people were like, they had the emotional Devils game and blah, blah, blah. Like, and they were just terrible. Well, the guys who didn't play in the Devils game before were terrible too. What's their excuse? So it was not a great game. One last thing. I give Wahlstrom a break on the Senators game because he doesn't play on the penalty kill.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I give him a break because he's not out there. But my hopes were not high heading into Columbus on Saturday night again, a place the Islanders have not had a ton of luck. But like you said, it was absolutely vintage. It was, in a lot of ways, kind of a pleasure to watch. It was a 2-0 Islanders win. It was a very evenly played game. The Blue Jackets didn't really take control until the sort of back half of the third period. We'll get to that in a second. But Palmieri had a diving score, his third goal of the season after Engvall's shot. They basically controlled the first period, which was great. They played very well in the second. Again, it was about even. But Varlamov made 2 saves on Jack Roslovic in the same power play. He had breakaways, 2 breakaways. I don't know what was going on, but Varlamov was great, and he was fantastic all game. I said this in that Sabres game. He was the one positive come out of that Sabres game, but Varley's back. He looks great. He looks better than he has in at least the last 2 seasons. But it was still just 1-0 after 2. Their third period was okay. Matt Martin scored to make it 2-0 late, which is hilarious. But there was a penalty kill about halfway through the third. I forget what the infraction was. But after that point, the Islanders got very loose, and the Blue Jackets started to pour it on. In fairness, they were only down 2-0, at that point. And so shots ended up being 17-10 Columbus, which seems about right. And things got very loose towards the end of the game. They were trying to really scramble and get in something before the buzzer sounded. But again, Varlamov made 35 saves. Spencer Martin, who you mentioned before in his first NHL game of the year, made 31. It was a much better feeling game. The Islanders, even if it was even, I'll take it, because I thought they traded chances with the Blue Jackets pretty well and capitalized. And frankly, Martin was really good. The Islanders could have had a couple more goals there too. So it was nice to see. Wasn't quite as nice as that Arizona game, but it was a hell of a lot more fun than either the Senators or the Avalanche game, and you can't beat the score there. And it was nice to see Varlamov, too, get a nice win there. So, what did you think of this one? Again, it's nice to get a win in Columbus. Nice to hear that cannon. It's great. They don't have come around too often.
The thing that I would say, so that you get the, you go to 1-0 in must-win games on the season when you beat the Senators. Kind of takes the anxiety out of the Blue Jackets game. It becomes a different kind of, more regular kind of anxiety, I guess, for that one. And they played a really just regular game, which is not very descriptive, but that's fair about the game, I think. A fair way to talk about the game. And even the fact that they were a little helter-skelter in the third, I mean, that's naturally going to happen when a team is being shut out. They're down and it's only 1-0.
Yeah.
They're trying like hell to get on the board. Jack Roslovic turns into Connor McDavid for a couple shifts on the same play twice on that power play. And it's one of those games where afterwards you the first person I think about wasn't even, like, Varlamov was so good, but it's just Lamoriello. Like wherever he watched that game, he probably just smiled and was like, I told you so. Like, this is why, you know, why you build out from the back and why you have this stalwart backup goaltender. How desperate would Edmonton be to have Semyon Varlamov on their team right now?
Oh my God.
Like,
I'm watching him right now in the Heritage Classic, and both these teams could use Semyon Varlamov.
Yeah, exactly. Like, my friend texted today saying, is he he could be a top 10 goalie in the league. And honestly, that sounds nuts, but he might be. Like, he's a great goalie. And when you start to think about the goalies in the league, like who would be better than him, pound for pound, like, I don't really know how deep you can get.
Yeah.
Cause there's a whole host of teams that have two very pedestrian goalies.
Yeah.
And then there's the Islanders, who have two, one who's the best on the planet, and the other one who is probably, if top 10 is a stretch, top 15 definitely isn't. And they're so good. And Sorokin had this huge smile on his face.
Yeah.
When he met Varlamov at the end, and he gave him the puck. I don't know if he was like hiding it or something. Like, it's just a beautiful, beautiful moment from the two of them. And I think it's not crazy to say that Varlamov shutouts probably make Sorokin, like, which Sorokin posts a shutout. That's his job. He looks at it like that. No, that's my job. Stop pucks. And then when he gets to be the backup for a night, he's just a fan and he's rooting on his best buddy Varley there. That game was, there's a lot, I think a lot of individual performances. Once again, Dobson, like, the dude, just, he has that phone. Maybe he just got a flip phone or something.
Dude, deleting Twitter is the best thing this guy's ever done for his career. And I said it last week, and I said it this week, and I'll probably say it again. That's the best thing he could have done for himself. Yeah.
He's been awesome. I hope you almost hope he's searching his name again. because all he'll see is people being like, this guy rocks. It's so nice to have him back. And
Adam Pellick was also much better in the Columbus game. And Oliver Wallstrom, I thought, was pretty good. You know, but certainly the best game he's played all year. Couldn't come up with any points, but he made himself a factor, which was nice. Like, you know, we want to give the guy credit, and he looked better. And even Lane said that was a good game for him. So
they switched him and Barzal at a point.
Yeah.
And the first couple shifts, I was kind of like, ugh. There was one where Wallstrom didn't get a puck deep, and I was a little mad. And then they had a 2-on-1 with him and Horvat.
Yeah.
Where Horvat made a play you never see, and it's one that I wish more that, like, the Islanders would just make it their protocol almost at a 2-on-1, which is make that early pass, and you already get the defender moving. Like Horvat passed that puck to Wallstrom on the blue line, and all of a sudden that shifts everybody's eyes already once, and it's hard to go back in the fourth. And Wallstrom missed the net by about 8 feet.
I was going to say his biggest problem in that game, he kept missing the net.
Yeah,
like, he kept having chances, but he kept missing the net.
Yeah, shots were getting blocked that he would miss the net. And, he definitely earned another, like a little bit of a longer leash, I think, is the important thing. And then Sam Bolduc was good too.
Yeah.
And we also need to say that this team, right? I mean, Dobson leaves them in points with 7, but he's tied with Kyle Palmieri. Who's been good too.
Yes.
Like, these, like, they're the first couple games were all about Nelson and Horvat and Barzal for good reason. But like, this team now is getting production from all over the place. Like,
yeah.
Clutterbuck's got a couple goals. Cizikas has one. Martin's got one. I think the only regular, the only forward who's played every game so far, well, two actually, right? Engvall and Pajot. But the two of them, I think, have been really good in their roles. Pajot, that Senators game, I don't know if Pajot got off the ice.
Yeah.
Like, it seemed like, you could almost see the bench, like him being like, ah, shit. And just like hopping back over to kill a penalty.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, so that Blue Jackets game, they, there's some finality to Saturday games. It determines how the week ends on most weeks in the NHL, because more likely than not, you're playing on the Saturday and not the Sunday.
Yeah.
We record our podcasts on Sundays for the most part too. So it has that Saturday game always has a pretty big deal on like the tone of this. And then you go into the work week and it kind of decides your Islander mood. So they're always important. And to get that one after the Colorado loss, to come out of those three games 2-1.
Yeah.
Huge for our psyche.
Mm.
Like
definitely
Islander fans. Cause you got a couple winnable games here this week, and they're 4-2-1 despite having played 2.5. I think you can maybe say 3, like the Sabres game in the first in the season opener was really good. Mm. The Coyotes game was good, and I think you can probably say the Blue Jackets game was good too.
Yeah.
So 3 really good games. Then they got a win in calamitous fashion against the Senators.
I mean, the other three games had moments, like even the game against the Devils, like there were moments there where they were pretty good. They just ended up on the losing end in overtime.
And you think about the Avalanche game had moments. The Devils game, the schedule's not been easy either. I know they've been home for 6 out of the, or 5 out of the 7, but the Sabres were supposed to be good. They played them twice. They obviously played the Avalanche and Devils, who are cup contenders. The Senators are a good team. Like they haven't had a cupcake situation just yet. Like the Coyotes is as close as you can get because they were on the second night of it back to back. But
and the Blue Jackets
but that's on the road and
Saturday night. Yeah,
it's yeah, exactly. It's they've been playing all right too. Mm. So they've had. I'm not saying that. That's they're playing the USSR, but they haven't. I don't think that they've had a soft schedule to start.
No.
So and they're 4-2-1 through this. So they could have been a lot worse. And I'm quite pleased that they've kept things on the rails. And you know, it's nice not to be mad at them right now.
As always, yes, definitely, and definitely not mad right now. I mean, as we're talking right now, believe it or not, they're in third place in the Metro, which is nice. Although the Rangers have a game, well, I guess they're in first place, so it really wouldn't matter right now. But that's not a bad place to be right now in the early part of the season. One more thing about Columbus before we take a break, I found them to spend more time in the offensive zone. They actually had a lot more zone time in that game than they had in previous games, and it was nice to see. And that's where like guys like Palmieri and Engvall and Martin, in a way, can do a lot more damage when they don't get these sort of one and done shifts, which drive me nuts, which is how the games turn. You know, they'll be doing well, and all of a sudden they'll be spending less and less time in the offensive zone. Before you know it, they're on their heels and the other team is tied or scored or whatever. And I did not notice that in the Columbus game. So again, it was actually kind of a fun game to watch. And they came out on the other side. Okay, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to look at the next three games, which, as Mike mentioned before, a couple of winnable ones in there, which would be good. We're also going to talk about that Frozen Frenzy that we mentioned before. And we're going to take a look at some ex-Islanders elsewhere. This is always fun. All right, so meet us on the other side.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash. Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And now, a word from our sponsors. First is VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, jerseys, mugs, and more, featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. Vintage Ice Hockey also carries our Al Arbor and the Island merch, and our portion of the sales always go directly to the Center for Dementia Research. Use the code ANXIETY20 to save 20% off an order of two items. That is VintageIceHockey.com. Try wines from the Pinot Project. They offer a rosé, a Pinot Grigio, and a Pinot Noir that was named a 2022 Top 100 Best Buy by Wine Enthusiast Magazine. All are delicious, priced at less than $15 a bottle, and available at local wine shops and at UBS Arena. Learn more at thepinotproject.com. Please drink responsibly. So coming up, the Islanders have games on Monday against the Detroit Red Wings. So the day you're listening to this, then they are in Washington on Thursday, the 2nd, and then they are at home to the Carolina Hurricanes on the 7th. This is a really interesting group of teams right now because the Red Wings have started out hot. They are really basking in the Alex DeBrincat era. Him and Dylan Larkin have been kind of running roughshod. They did lose the other day to Boston, so I don't know, maybe they're coming down a little bit, but that's not going to be an easy game at all. The Caps have really struggled. They're in last place in the division, I think, still. They won also today, but they have not really found their footing at all and seem to all be kind of waiting around for Alex Ovechkin to score that historic Gretzky-beating goal. And then on Saturday, the surprisingly bad Hurricanes are coming in. Now, I say that, of course, jinxing the Islanders. The Hurricanes are not a bad team, but again, gotten off to a slow start. Kind of losing games. They played on the West Coast early, which had to be kind of weird. I'm sure they'll wake up at some point and they'll do their usual thing. But this is a weird one. And I mean, at the risk of repeating ourselves, I feel like kind of the same thing I felt last week. If they can win two of these, you know, I think that's probably the best case scenario there. I would think that that game, even though it's in Washington, is probably the most winnable one. But, you know, Saturday night against the Hurricanes, maybe they're on their back foot a little bit, can be good. And then, you know, Detroit, yeah, they're scoring a lot of goals, but I still don't like their defense, and their goalies are either going to – it's either going to be Ville Husso or James Reimer in goal. So I'm not really afraid of either of those two guys, and if you can make them work, you can score some goals. So what do you think of these three coming up here? Again, it's a weird collection of teams. It's sort of topsy-turvy. Usually the Caps are one of the better teams. Detroit stinks, and Carolina's on top. Meanwhile, Detroit's on top now. Carolina's kind of finding their way, and the Caps look just sort of lost in a lot of the games so far this season.
Yeah, I think the big question on everyone's mind is if Alex DeBrincat is going to get booed.
Oh, he's going to get booed. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And he's going to do the Johnny Gaudreau. I don't know, why are they booing me? I didn't ever talk to these guys. What the hell?
It's going to be weird because the only thing I can think of with so the Red Wings game, I like 50-50, no feel for it. I'll be there, and I don't know what to expect from them. I don't think that they play many. They're not playing many Islander style games. It's like a lot of 5-2s and stuff, so we'll see. But that Capitals game, I'm just not going to be able to shake the feeling of last season, that Monday night in Washington, where the Islanders had a chance to basically stamp their ticket to the playoffs.
Mm.
And then proceeded to play the worst game of the season.
Yeah.
Where they was it two goals on the first two shots?
I think it was something like that.
Yeah,
I think that was that another Varley start?
No, that was Sorokin. That was because, and we should say that one of the, I thought it was a good move to start Varley against the Blue Jackets. The Islanders don't have another back to back for a while, and we talked a lot last season towards the end about whether it will kind of shoot come back to haunt them that they just rode Sorokin so hard down the stretch.
Hmm.
So, and obviously he pitched a shutout, so it's the right move. That Capitals game will haunt me for, even though they ended up making the playoffs, just the dread I felt right after that game, and you and I being like, we have to record something after that.
That was
one of the
lowest
moments of this Islander era. So I'll be thinking about that one. And they seem to have righted their ship quite a little bit. I think that'll be the sort of linchpin to the week, whether if you can win that game, I think you'll be able to scrounge a point or two from the other two and continue to keep the season on the rails. Because, the Hurricanes are all over the place. And
yeah.
We've never seen them like this under Rod the Bod. Usually they're just like buttoned up and good defensively.
They know how to play their game always. Yeah. And now it just seems like they're kind of like maybe a little bit out of sorts, which is weird. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, maybe they can take advantage of that. And then I think we do our best to not look ahead, but so much about what you need out of a spit of games like this really does kind of matter. It really does depend on like what's on the horizon. And I think like the next handful of games gets pretty tough because they have a game against the Wild, the Bruins. Yeah. Then they go out to the Alberta, the Western Canada swing, which, by the way, the Rangers don't have a back-to-back this season till like game 20. They go out to Alberta, don't play Connor McDavid, and don't have a back-to-back on the Western Canadian swing. Like, I don't think I've ever seen a team go through that road trip, being Canucks, Oilers, Flames, and more recently with the Kraken, and not have a back-to-back. While the Islanders will play at home on Veterans Day, the November 11th, against the Capitals, and they will fly. They have one day in between that game and a game against the Oilers, then a back to back in Vancouver and Seattle, and then they go back to Alberta and play the Flames.
Yeah. So and then they have another back to back a week later where they're in Ottawa, and then they play at home to Philly. it's crazy.
This is the thing, I think the difference between Islander and Ranger fan is like, I notice these things about the Rangers, and I don't think Ranger fans notice them about their own team. I'm losing sleep over the fact that the Rangers don't play a back-to-back their first 20 games of the year, and they didn't have one on this Western Canadian swing, and they don't play Connor McDavid on the swing. They catch the Oilers and Flames when they're completely flailing. Yeah. I'm sure by the time we get out there, they'll have righted their ships.
It's so funny that McDavid is playing in this Heritage Classic that I'm watching right here. By the way, future Weird Islander AJ Greer has made it 3-2. He brought the Flames within 3-2. But it's so funny because McDavid originally, because he's hurt, he wasn't supposed to play in this game. And I looked and I'm like, wait a minute. He's out 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, thereabouts, Islanders at Oilers. Oh, this is Crosby all over again. And I know this is going to happen. Well, turns out he came back early, so there goes that. But it is funny that the Rangers just happen to play in Edmonton without McDavid.
Yeah,
so.
Of course. They get them at terrible times. And
right.
So the Canucks, but so the Rangers don't have a back-to-back on that swing. Yeah. But the Canucks do. They play the Rangers on their second night of a back-to-back, so they get Casey DeSmith.
Right.
I need to calm down here. It's not even the end of October, but you get my drift. But yeah, so I think that with that stretch looming in November, you'd want them to continue just to make hay and bank points, because this start of the season is looking a lot like last year, I think, a little bit better, and obviously the record's better, but in terms of there's been some loose games and some the defensive boring Islanders haven't quite showed up to the party yet. They're much more inebriated, basically.
Yeah.
So you hope that those Islanders, that on script, very stalwart defensive Islanders, show up in time for when the schedule gets tougher, because it will pretty quickly here.
Yeah, it is very much like last season, where we were pulling our hair after the first half because they just, they've tried to goose the offense, but now they forgot how to play defense. And then once they remembered how to play defense, they made the playoffs by going on a little bit of a run towards the end. So, you know, again, if we can marry both of those things together, I think they'd be good. And we've seen a little bit of that. Again, the Coyotes game was like that. Parts of the Blue Jackets game were like that. Even parts of the Senators game were like that. So it would be nice. Again, these are, when I say they're winnable, I don't mean that like the Islanders should beat the hell out of these three teams, but I'm looking at three teams that the Islanders can beat. Let's just say, as long as they're focused, they're disciplined, no more 9 penalty games, please. And they just get to their game and can limit the offensive chances, again, much like they did against Columbus, or at least play even with the other teams would be good too. I wouldn't mind seeing Varley against the Caps too. I feel like you said, I don't want to overwork Sorokin. I think that would be a good spot for him in Washington. It's not a back to back, but it would be good to get him in there, because again, he's looked great. So might as well use that to their advantage. So we'll have to see. But you take 2 out of these 3, I think we'll be happy. If they take 3 out of 3 or get 5 points, with an overtime loss or something, I'd be very happy. And I'll take it, because in the week after, anytime I see the Bruins on the schedule, I get very nervous. By the way, the Caps, again, like you said, are on Veterans Day. So they're going to play the Caps basically twice in 2 weeks, which is always an interesting scenario. So you mentioned the Vancouver Canucks before. They are always in the news because they're the Canucks and everything they do is super duper important. The Rangers played out there and it was our first chance, at least local people's first chance, to see Anthony Beauvillier in action this season for the Canucks. And he got his first point of the season, an assist. Things haven't been going great for him. The Canucks themselves have looked pretty good. And, my Canuck fans, friends on Twitter are very excited. They're all very happy that this is it's a very cool thing that they're excited for their team, until eventually it probably will pull the rug out from under them. But Bo just hasn't been along for the ride. And you wanted to talk about this a little bit, because now we're, 6 or 7 months out from the trade, which one publication who shall remain nameless called a lose-lose for both teams. And I don't know what he's watching, because when I watch Bo Horvat play, he plays pretty well. He's a guy who makes things happen. He's got 5 points right now in 7 games, 3 goals, 2 assists. Those are pretty darn good numbers. And I'm looking at a guy who's, the offense can run right through. Meanwhile, and then, we take no pleasure in reporting this, that Bo is not really had a great start to the season. And you never know. Maybe he'll turn around. He's done that before. Atu Ratu, by the way, is still in Abbotsford, and he's got 4 points in 8 games down there in the AHL. So far, if you're going to look at this trade and that, you're going to kind of reevaluate the Bo for Bo trade, I don't know. Seems like the Islanders got a good one here. is that the way you feel as well after watching that game?
So the Islanders are 21, not including the playoffs, 21-11-5 since they acquired Horvat. And Barzal has played 13 of those 37 games, I believe.
Yeah.
So, they like, this guy's really good. Yeah. And he's really good for this team. He is such an Islander. Mm. And we say it all the time. We've joked about the lawsuit and the fact that he didn't score despite having so many chances last year. Like, he was completely Islanderified. it was almost, I can't think of the word, like, erased. It was like redacted that this guy was traded to the Islanders. Yeah. Like it wasn't Bo Horvat that got traded to the Islanders. It was just like some 28-year-old forward. It was pick your run of the mill NHL veteran forward
We talked about this because they he was one of the main topics of conversation for a year, even before the Bruce Boudreau was going to get fired thing got dragged out for 6 months. It was like, oh, they're going to have to trade him. They're going to have to choose between Bo Horvat and Kevin Hayes. They, you know, Horvat's the captain. He's been such a great player. What are they going to do? He's only, you know, increasing his trade value. How's this going? Every single day was a different Bo Horvat update. And as soon as he got traded to the Islanders, crickets, nothing. Yeah. It was like he didn't exist anymore. So
and what was written about him was as if they like acquired Evan Rodriguez or someone like that, like a decent, you know, guy. Yeah. And they're like, wow, the Islanders gave up a lot for this player, who, by the way, is he did score 30 goals for the Canucks already this season. But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. Goals aren't that important. What's important is what shows up here on these blobs and on my spreadsheet. And I think so. The Athletic gave the trade C minuses and C's, and you can't write an article that carries that much weight. It can't just be put on one person. That's right. It's not fair to that one person. But the headline here, I can't read the whole thing because I'm finally done with it with my subscription, is NHL trade grades. Bo Horvat moves to Islanders. Is it a lose-lose deal? And then it's just a bunch of C's and C minuses, and talks about how the Islanders are not going to make the playoffs, even though they did. And what I want to just point out, the reason I want to talk about this is because Horvat's off to a great start this season. His production might not be incredible, but it's the Islanders are just not. People need to just kind of realize the Islanders are not going to have 105 point players. They're just not. It's just not. This team is just not built to have somebody score 40 goals and have 72 assists and have there be hockey Twitter accounts that cut up their highlights and with the eyeball emojis and stuff. And, you know, they're just not going to have that player. And that's okay. But what this guy is he's solid. He's a legitimate first line center. He's really good with the puck on his stick. He's clearly good with Barzal. The two of them, I think, work really well together, even though they were separated in that Blue Jackets game. I think everybody would be pretty pleased with what we've seen. Barzal's getting a lot of shots off this year. It looks like he's kind of trying to add that to the game. And then you look in Vancouver, and like you said, they are Anthony Beauvillier is on their fourth line. He's got 1 point, and we love the guy, but Bo Horvat is miles and miles better than that. Ratu is on the fourth line in Abbotsford, I believe.
Yeah.
And their first round pick ended up turning into Philip Peronek, who him and Quinn Hughes have been good together. But at one point, are people going to say, yeah, the Islanders, that this trade might work out for this team?
Well, much like you said, just like the Islanders are never going to have a 110 point player, the Islanders are never going to get credit for this trade. They just won't. If Bo Horvat wins the Hart Trophy, they're never going to get credit. It's going to be like it never happened, basically.
It'll be, talk to us in 2028 when see how that contract feels hanging around your neck. I wanted to talk about it because there's been some smoke around Beauvillier in Vancouver, and there's been absolutely none around Horvat. And it must we've said this a couple times on this podcast, like it must just be so nice for the guy. He's off to like just a solid start. The team's off to a solid start, and Thomas Drantz isn't going through his old pizza boxes outside of his house or going to his kids' schools to is your dad, what's your dad been saying to you lately? Like he's not, there's none of that here. And that must be brilliant. So, I think, you know, it's still early. It's only been 37 games. It's only been, 8 or 9 months, but it does look like the Islanders might be ahead on this trade. And by the way, it's not that these grades should matter, cause they don't, they're just good fodder for times like these. That same publication gave the Rangers an A or an A+ for trading for Patrick Kane. So, but I don't know if they're going to maybe hold their hand up for that one either. They always do. They always love to admit when they're wrong. those folks. So
definitely. I mean, this is the publication, by the way, that is constantly reevaluating old drafts, but yet they never reevaluate old trades, you know? So, and again, even if they did, they're not going to give the Islanders, they're not going to go back and retroactively give the Islanders an A plus. They'll give them like, all right, well, fine. We'll go from a C to a B minus. Well, gee, thanks a lot. You
know? And that was I think the biggest trade last year, just in terms of the build up. People were clamoring for a trade. It was the first trade of that deadline season.
Well, they talked about him going to the Leafs or the Penguins or the Bruins or the Oilers or one of those
always
things.
Always could be the Penguins. Like, he's just a perfect Penguin, Elliot. And so it was like just a huge trade. And all people do is complain about that stuff never happening. And then it does and it works out. And you know what trade we hear about once a week still to this day? Anthony Mantha for Jacob Vrana. Like, we'll hear about that trade.
Yeah.
But we won't hear about the fact that this Bo Horvat trade is working out for the Islanders, who are off to a 4-2-1 start, thanks in no small part to the way Bo is driving that first line.
Whereas Vrana is now in St. Louis, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes, he was. And he just crashed again the other night.
Right. And Mantha's been on the trade block for like a year and a half now. Like, he's just not fit in Washington at all. He started out great, and then...
We all remember where we were.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. That's a good point. It's a good point. And, you know, hopefully Bo keeps doing what he's doing. Our Bo, anyway. The Canucks Bo. I don't know. He's a UFA at the end of the year. So, you know, if he doesn't turn it up, I can see him maybe going someplace else. But, you know, in fairness, the Canucks are having a good year, and... You know, like I said before, I have Canuck fan friends that are excited about this year, and they're very excited about the Quinn Hughes era. He's playing very well, getting a little sick of the Hughes boys, if I'm being honest. And it's funny because the Flyers are playing well, and I have many Flyers fan friends that are very excited for their team playing well. The Habs are playing okay. You know, I don't think anybody's expecting them to be in the playoff hunt anytime soon, but they look pretty good so far. All those teams, even my Detroit fan friends, they're looking at a team that's pretty good. And in a way, I'm very jealous because my team is also right there, right with those other teams. They're all bunched up together. And it's very hard for me to get excited. Like, I was excited after the Coyotes game, a little bit after the Blue Jackets game, but otherwise I'm very nervous and I find every mistake to be just unbearable. And so they have periods like the one against the Senators where they have 7 penalties, or the like where they're playing the Avalanche and they have them, you know, have a lead, and then all of a sudden in the span of less than a minute they don't and they're now chasing the game. I get very mad, but I want to change that. I don't want to be this guy. I don't want to not feel good after wins. I want to be excited, and I really just want the team to play the best it can and go back to, you know, the tried and true methods that work. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes this week. Again, they have some teams that they definitely can beat. So hopefully they can continue to keep it going. They have 2 wins now. And if they come out with 4 in a row or 5 in a row, even better. Well, then we'll start getting excited. Last thing real quick before we sign off is the Frozen Frenzy was last Tuesday, the game of the Islanders Avalanche game. It was on ESPN2, and they covered all the teams and went around the league all the time. It was hosted by John Pujagras and former Weird Islander Kevin Weeks, and this is going to be a very short discussion because I watched 5 minutes of it, and I heard Buchagross yelling about sauce and mitts and lettuce and the whole thing, and I immediately turned it off and never turned it back on again. I really do feel like I appreciate that John Buchagross likes hockey. I appreciate that ESPN is able to put the people that like hockey on TV covering hockey again. I feel great for them. I'm happy for them. I would love that if I worked there and could cover that stuff again. But I don't know, man. I really don't know. I just don't get it. I don't know. I don't know who this is for, because every hockey fan I know hates it. So I don't know. They must have some market research saying that people like that shtick, but I don't. And it made me turn it off, and I did not participate in the Frozen Frenzy. Maybe they'll do it again at some point. I don't know. But I was hoping for just like kind of jumping back and forth. I didn't know it was going to be hosted by anybody. I wish it was just kind of going back and forth, popping into different games. But it wasn't. It was like a whole coordinated thing, and I just, it's not for me. It really isn't. And if it's for you, great. I'm glad you liked it, but it ain't for me. So I took a pass. Did you watch any of the Frozen Frenzy at all, or were you
I watched a little bit of it. I mm-hmm. And I timed it so like the first 15 minutes that I watched were just a couple games, like you said, like them just bouncing back and forth, and it was the local broadcast calling the games. But what I didn't realize was that wasn't the official Frozen Frenzy. The Frozen Frenzy, I guess, started at 8 p.m. Eastern, right, as the Islanders were starting. And
yeah,
this was just the build up to it. That, and so they did some really annoying promo for it where Buchigrass was like running through the ESPN campus.
Right. And, yeah. yeah.
And then they sat down at a studio, and then, yeah, him and Weeks were like, there's Caden Primo, not Wayne, not Keith. Goaltender.
Yes.
Tendy.
Yes.
Caden Primo.
And that's like, the clip that I saw.
And I just turned it off immediately.
Yeah. who asked for this? I don't know.
Nobody. And you knew it was going to be terrible when they had a graphic on Twitter for it. And it was all these photoshops of 16 games on. And there was a silhouette of a man watching all 16 games on this big screen, and he had a director's chair, and it said Buchigrass on the back of it. I was like, "Are you got to be kidding me?" Like, this sport loves to make things that are not groundbreaking in 2023 seem like they are absolutely groundbreaking. This would have been groundbreaking in 2009, maybe. Yeah. Like, I don't know when Red Zone started in the NFL. Mm. But a couple years after that, if the NHL did something like this a few times a year, like, then they'd be ahead of the curve. But this was, I like the idea of having a marathon day with hockey on all the time and the game starting at different times. I don't necessarily need 16 on at once, but you want to do it once a day, go for it. I'm not going to complain about something that they at least tried something.
Yeah.
And then they absolutely ruined it for me personally. And I know a lot of people out there, like, just, he's such an abrasive watch.
Yeah.
That you just, you can't do it. Yeah. And that's something we're going to have to say a bunch of times throughout this year, because the Islanders are on, have some ESPN games where I'm sure he's going to be calling it.
Mm.
And we're going to have to hear him explain, you know, how, icy Brock Nelson's releases, and
that Barzell had to cut the lettuce before the season started, and so yeah, Stroke. Yeah,
sick,
yeah, silky mitts, or you know, groovy kind of glove is, I think, was his thing for goalies. So
there was something that happened on, I don't know how much College Game Day you've watched.
Zero.
The show is great because it kind of captures the spirit of college football. It's very carnival-y, very festival-y. It doesn't take itself too seriously, and the hosts aren't, like, they know why they're there. They're not there to be the star of the show, I don't think. And it's very hokey, but it's also self-aware. It's a I think the best show ESPN's ever done.
Mm.
And then they put Elliot Friedman's favorite sportscaster of all time, Pat McAfee, on it this year.
Yeah. Ugh.
And he kind of just like ruined the vibe of it. It started to become very different, and a lot of people were like, this is just not what the show is about. Like, that kind of personality just doesn't, you're either on the show or you're above the show. Like, you can't be both. And he tried to be both, and I give him a lot of credit because he's like, I hear the feedback, and I don't need to be on the show. Like, I'm totally okay with not ESPN offered to resign him, and he's like, I don't think I'm gonna come back, because like, if it's not good, like, I'm not, this isn't my show. Like, I tried something, it didn't work, and he's gonna step aside.
Interesting.
John Buchigrass
has
certainly heard the feedback, because it's impossible not to hear the feedback when you got thousands of people tweeting about it every night.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's going to be stepping aside.
No.
From this, because I think he invented hockey.
Well, college hockey, he definitely invented. Yeah, Pat McAfee is definitely not for me either. People love it. Every time I see a clip of him standing up in his tank top yelling, I get very upset. I don't know. He's just not for me. Again, I can't deal with it. Don't even get me started on the whole Aaron Rodgers thing. I don't want to hear about what he has to say about anything anymore. But I guess he's apparently discovered hockey, Pat McAfee, because he's had like Austin Matthews on. He had
his show. So they're like, they're probably like, you got to do a hockey segment.
Yeah.
Please help us.
So he's been doing a thing called Hockey is Awesome, which I guess is something you have to tell people when they don't watch hockey. So, again, if it brings people in, that's cool. It's not for me. Again,
even that segment kind of just like goes to show what we've been saying about the ESPN coverage is like they cover it like they do with a cornhole broadcast.
Right.
Hockey is quote unquote one of the four more North American like major sports.
Allegedly.
It's not darts, right? Like it's not. You can see Pat McAfee having a segment on his show like darts is awesome or cricket is awesome or rugby is awesome because these are sports that people in this country aren't watching and they don't know about. Like they didn't grow up with the kid sitting next to them in their class isn't a rugby fan or something, but they are hockey fans. So like the fact that they even do that is so it's like almost insulting in a way. Like
I was gonna say it's patronizing.
Yeah, it's so patronizing. Yeah. Like.
Yeah.
No, we don't need this. Like, I don't, as a hockey fan, like, the last thing I want to see is this. You know, maybe if you're on, like, ESPN Chile and you want to introduce to the great people of Santiago this sport of hockey or, somewhere in Romania or something.
Yeah.
By all means, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have this sport in this country.
It what gets me about stuff like that is the way they say team names, and it feels different. I don't know, I can't really put my finger on it, but when they say stuff like, you know, here's Sasha Barkov of the Florida Panthers, like the way they say it doesn't roll off the tongue and doesn't have the same weight to when they just say the Cowboys or the Lakers, because they know that people know the Cowboys and Lakers, but they don't, they're assuming that people aren't gonna have ever heard of the Florida Panthers, let alone Sasha Barkov. So they make a whole thing. And then the Islanders get that too. The Blue Jackets, the Predators, because there's still people out there. There's still people that are like, wait, they have a hockey team in Dallas? Yes, they've had a hockey team in Dallas for 30 years. I can understand. How can you not know that? But, you know, the Stars are way lower on the pecking order than Cowboys, Mavericks, and, you know, obviously the Rangers or whatever. So real quick, you'll appreciate this. For me, like, I'll take your word for it on College Game Day. I'm not really a college football person at all. And it always seems like complete chaos to me. My go-to and the thing that I wish the NHL had is basically the Premier League mornings, the Premier League show that NBC does and Peacock and NBCSN did, where it's Rebecca Lowe and two other guys, and they talk to you like you're an adult, and they're not trying to sell you on the sport. They're here to tell you what this team is doing right, what this team is doing wrong, who's coming up next, what they need to do to win, and that's it. And, you know, I'm not a huge expert, but like the two Robbies, sometimes Tim Howard is there, sometimes it's another guy. They seem to just talk to you like you're just somebody who's watching the sport. They're not trying to sell job on you. They're not trying to tell you how awesome this thing is. And they're definitely not snoozing after, you know, in the intermission, which we've seen people do for the Islanders. And Rebecca Lowe is just the best. Like she's so calm. She's so cool. She just makes it seem like you're just part of the party. And she's just there. And again, they treat you like you have some sort of intelligence, right? Even if you have no idea what you're watching. I don't know what I'm watching, and I never feel like I'm being pandered to at all when I watch the Premier League show. So that's what I kind of, maybe it's a little boring, but I wish the NHL kind of had that, because I would prefer that style.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I think, we gave the NBC Sports coverage of the Islanders a lot of, I don't know, stick. Because it wasn't great, but like you said, at least they did kind of treat you like you were coming in to watch that sport, not as an alien life, like who just landed on the planet. It was like, look at these life forms skating around.
Right. What's everybody doing out there?
Yeah. What is in their hands?
Yeah.
What is the guy with the pillows and the helmet on defending? What is Yeah, there's none of that. This league just has not found its comfort level yet, or comfort zone. I think the TNT coverage, most people would say, is at least the game, like the way the game is broadcast is there, but the rest just isn't. And yeah, it's a shame because that The Frozen Frenzy should have, like, that should have been a nice holiday for me, basically. I should have just been able to sit on the couch and just enjoyed 6 or 7 hours of watching hockey nonstop. And instead, I watched almost none of it. And I love I watched so much of the sport. And I the guy who's running the show there is just so bad that I couldn't even get through that. Yeah.
You chose to watch the Islanders cough up a game to the Avalanche in excruciating, mostly excruciating fashion instead of watching a smorgasbord of hockey, which is what you should have watched. But yeah, it's true. Well, we shall see. You know, we always have these sort of moments where we talk about hockey coverage, and I'm sure we'll be back. And again, I've said it 100 times. I was watching a game last night. It was the Kings Vegas game. And, you know, I was watching the Kings broadcast. It was fine, but it does have a kind of bit of a hokey quality to it. And I was telling my wife, I was like, you know, I've said this 100 times on the podcast. I was always very critical of the Islanders broadcast when it was Howie Rose and Eddie Westfall, then Howie and Billy Jaffe, or then Howie, then Joe Micheletti, then Howie and Billy Jaffe, then Howie and Butch, now Brendan and Butch. I was always critical back then. And then I got the NHL Center Ice package and I watched games from around the league and I realized, goddamn, do we have it good. we have always had it good when it came to broadcasters. And I will probably never complain about an Islanders broadcast crew ever again, because we got the best one, to be blunt. And so, you know, we're lucky that way. So why wouldn't you watch the Islanders Avalanche game, even if you had other 31, you know, or whatever it was, 15 other options? Why wouldn't you watch the best broadcasted game of that day? So there you go. Okay, couple of announcements real quick before we wrap this up. Number one, most important, Weird Islanders, the podcast, is back. Came back last Friday. Fantastic episode with Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, ironically. And he was great. he said he loved the concept of the show. So he wanted to come on. He loves doing other people's podcasts. And he picked a fantastic ex-Devil / ex-Islander, Alexander Cimak. And if you remember Alexander Cimak's one season as an Islander, you are a better fan than we are, because we had no idea. And he was like, listen, I don't have any fucking idea this guy was an Islander. I'm like, no, that's perfect. That's exactly what we want. So we had a great time talking to him about Cimak and about the White Castles of New Jersey and, you know, the deathly escape to and from the Meadowlands over the New Jersey Turnpike and all kinds of stuff. So check it out. It's fantastic. We'll be back in another couple of weeks with another great episode, but feels good to have Weird Islanders, the podcast, back. We've been working our asses off recording episodes since about September, and every single one is a banger. They're all, the worst part is that sometimes I got to wait months to put these out, and I hate that because they're so good. I would dump them all out so you could binge them like Netflix style if I could, but you're going to have to wait, but they're all great. So thanks again to Greg for coming on. We had a great time, and he said he'll come on again, so we will try that again. So that's number one. Number two is this week is going to be my book club over at the Patreon. And if you're I haven't been announcing these, but if you're a listener to the main subscription feed, you're going to get Islanders award winners, Mike Bossy part two, Calder Trophy episode on Tuesday. And that's also the same day as the book club over at the Patreon. So whether you're a free listener or a Patreon subscriber, you're going to get something cool that day. And yeah, that's about it. We'll be back next week with a new episode of Anxiety. We'll see where everybody's at. And hopefully the Islanders are still in the thick of things after these next three games. Michael Leboff, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at The Big Lebowski. Read his work at Action Network. Sign up at patreon.com for ad-free episodes. Like I said, follow us on Twitter at Islanders Anxiety Pod. Isles Anxiety Pod. I always forget to say that. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and at Spotify. Tell all your friends to listen to us. That's the best way to spread the word. Our theme song is Morning Haze by Family Dinner. Listen to more of their music on Bandcamp and at Spotify. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day. Follow the Fans First Sports Network, fansfirstsports.com. Shop VintageIceHockey.com. Try Wines from the Pinot Project. Any final thoughts from you on the week that was, the week that is, or the Frozen Frenzy that hopefully if we see again comes in a different form than what we saw this week?
It would have been pretty funny to watch like versus attempt that. Like it would just been
OLN even.
Yeah,
even
like it would have been, you know how college, not college, like high school games are filmed now. Like they just get someone who, right, you know, like the manager or something. Just it would have been like that.
It's usually like one stationary camera on top of like the press box, you know.
All right,
like
and now bleachers. we'll go check in on the Predators and Ducks. But yeah, I think that it's so far so good with the Islanders, despite the fact that Adam Pelech is playing like Rich Pilon, and if he could just transform back into Adam Pelech.
I just realized he had a fight, didn't he, in one of the games this week, or was that last week?
I don't know.
Where he had a fight, which is also very Rich Pilon.
He got hurt in that
right, yeah.
In the Blue Jackets game, and I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Because he made me most nervous was he came right back out on the ice, and I was like, oh, yeah. Just like Mayfield. This is great. Didn't miss a shift.
Right. They're doing all this without Scott Mayfield. I forgot about
that. Yeah. So like there's even like the team the actual process might be uneven, but like they're carrying a Rich Pilon on the team unexpectedly. And so the fact that they could get to 4-2-1 despite playing some funky abducted by alien style hockey is encouraging, like that you can win despite not having your best. Cause I don't think that was something they were doing very often last year. Like when they were bad, there were not many feel bad losses last season.
Yeah.
I'll say it again because I'm so happy he's back. And Noah, just keep leaving that cell phone in the locker, brother. You just right when you guys hit the ice for warmups, you just put that thing on do not disturb in your locker. I promise you. Yeah. Whoever's texting you during the game will still be texting you after the game.
Yeah.
And we love you, buddy.
I really am hoping that he continues this and he has an outstanding season and he comes out and says, I deleted Twitter off my phone and and I canceled my account, and it serves as a sort of call to action.
Yeah.
You know, for more people to just cancel their Twitter.
Like he goes like the spokesman for one of those anti-social media advocate.
Yeah.
Like kids don't download Twitter. Norris right. Trophy winner, six-time Norris Trophy winner. Noah Dobson tells you why about the time he culture of losing called him stinky poo poo caca and it drove him to delete his Twitter.
I deleted Twitter and so can you. Skating up the camera. So listen, if I could play a small role in that, I will be very, very happy. And if I could play a small role, that would be so funny if Noah won the Norris and came out and thank, and he just listed all the Twitter accounts and shit on him that one day.
I want to
Ethan from Gotham Sports Network, all the usual suspects would be like, you're welcome, I guess.
Anyway, yeah.
Right, we're getting ahead of ourselves. we're gonna stop right here. We'll be back next week. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you again real soon, and we'll see where the Islanders are at. All right, talk to you later. Take care. Bye bye.